High School Slumber Party is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
School is out and it's Friday night. I'm all wrapped up and I feel alright. Palo Alto, Malibu. This is all we want to do. I'm at the high school, baby, young, young.
Welcome, art students, blues record collectors, punk girls, and a special shout-out to those convenience store regulars out there. This is High School Slumber Party, the podcast where me and some friends look back at our teenage years through the lens of some iconic high school-centric films. I'm Brian Rodriguez, and the party's at my place this evening. But first, how was your Thanksgiving? Excuse my recovering from a food coma voice. I had a great Thanksgiving. I got to eat a lot of food, see a lot of family. It was fun. I hope yours was awesome as well, and I hope you found things that you're thankful for and you discuss them. Like I said last week, I think, I'm thankful for you slumberers out there. It gives me something to do, and I'm so excited to talk about your homework assignment this week. The fact that you didn't get John Cusack over the Thanksgiving Day holiday in an act of forgiveness, I suppose, to unblock us on Twitter. No, I'm kidding. Though that is your assignment. No, but I'm so excited to talk about this film, Ghost World.
This was your assignment, and I would like to see the results.
So we have my good friend Wesley Vina stopping by. Which I think is super appropriate because, I don't know, it's been like high school friends lately, but it's getting cold, at least in the Northeast where I'm located, but it's getting cold, it's the holiday season, the mirth of it, I suppose, is upon us, and I don't know, I like bringing it closer to home, talking to my friends from days of yore, and just, you know, talking about good movies. Last week we had Encino Man, with Kyle and Dan Ferrara, two people who went to high school with Wesley Vina and myself. So, I don't know, it just felt right. Oh man, you know what that sound means. Pack your favorite jammies, tell your mother you're sleeping over Brian's, because we're about to get our party on. I leave you with, and I want to read this so I don't screw it up, Jean Pechachan Ho by Muhammad Rafi. It's in the trailer, trust me. You're gonna love this episode. Class dismissed.
पहचान हो जीना आसान हो जान पहचान हो जीना आसान हो दिल को चुराने वालों आंख न चुराओ नाम तो बताओ.
It's really good to have you on because I didn't think you'd be on too. You've been referenced so much on this podcast.
You've told me. I have to put together like a super cut of all the references.
I think I told you, but originally it might have been American Pie or another episode, but you were definitely referred to as my jaded friend in high school.
Oh, great. And then I picked the right movie.
That works really perfectly. No, but I was listening to one. Oh, the one last week, Insano Man.
Oh, yeah.
You were mentioned a couple times. So
I heard it towards the beginning about, like, the drum crew with Kyle.
Yeah,
or,
just
or our, like, core group of friends.
I remember meeting Kyle. You brought Kyle into the...
I did.
Because you met him beforehand, right?
I did, yeah. I met him at a band camp, and at that time, I remember him being a huge Aerosmith fan. I don't know why. I don't think we ever talked about Aerosmith again.
He denies this.
Of course he does.
Kyle denies this. But there was a rumor. I don't know if it was a rumor back then. It was just a known fact that he told people that he, like, went on...
Yeah,
not
he
went
told
on tour
me,
with him,
I,
but, like, he went to concerts.
He went to a bunch of... Like, and I don't, like, I don't judge him for it, so I don't know
no,
why he denies
whatever.
It. It's just Aerosmith. Like, in retrospect, like, yeah, Aerosmith sucks. And to pretend you like Aerosmith is not that cool... But he did, and I don't judge him for it. But the denial is what gets me.
It's just funny that, like, I don't know how that came about. Or
yeah, it's like, not like I pulled it out of thin air. Like, how? Like, why would I even make that up?
And Aerosmith's so random.
Not I think I think he was just trying to make an icebreaker, and it was fine. Yeah, yeah, but it is random.
It is awkward yeah. when you meet people for the first time, especially, like, in high school, like, where we went to high school, just, like, all, like, the towns
yeah.
meeting up.
And then knowing Kyle, too, like... He was, like, a really nice kid, but I guess, like, in middle school he had some tough times. I don't know. But, no, he was, from the moment I met him, I liked him, obviously.
Yeah. Kyle can get more into his tough times on his podcast.
Yes,
Foodie
yes.
Foodie Films, perhaps.
But Kyle rocks. I love Kyle. We haven't talked in a while, but he's a very good person.
No. That reminded me of it, because I remember he brought you up. But thanks so much again, Wes, yeah. for coming on. It's I don't know pleasure. If you've heard the show before, but we introduce ourselves here by... saying our name, our high school, and our graduating class, and what the team name was. And
Wesley Vina. I graduated from Northern Valley Regional High School in 2005, and we were the Golden Knights.
Go Golden Knights.
Yes.
So again, classmate of mine.
Yes.
Good friend from way back in the day. So I start by asking my first-time guest always, what was your high school experience like? Like, what do you remember from high school?
You know, I had a I suppose, weird high school experience in the sense that I was in a band, but I also was in a rock band or a punk band or whatever, and we had our core group of friends, but then there was, like, other people in the peripheral that, like, tried to, I think, be in our group of friends. I don't know. I think I think of ourselves as popular outcasts.
I could see that, yeah. Last week on Encino Man, we briefly discussed Tommy Teets.
Wow.
There was a Tom Teets story.
Amazing.
We don't always talk about my particular high school experience on
of
the
course.
Show,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I have a lot of people I went to high school with on the show. So
sure.
He reminds me of one of them. There was that famous episode with Kyle where Kyle was gone a couple days and Tom Teets, like, sat in his chair, and then when Kyle came back, he was like, Reinfried, what are you doing
What are you doing here?
Here?
Yes. I was thinking that when I listened to the Encino Man podcast, when his voice came on, I'm like, Reinfried, what are you doing here? The thing about Teets, one other thing, is the bruise.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we mentioned Bruce. That as well, yeah.
Okay,
that's where you came up. Dan mentioned that, like, in science class with whatever that... I forgot her name.
Yeah, whatever.
That you and him, mostly you, just punched him so much.
The bruise.
And the bruise just expanded and expanded.
And the point of the bruise was to keep it there, like, forever. And he didn't care. He, like, let us do it.
Oh, man. We sound like such bullies.
But we weren't, though. We were, like... We were... I don't know.
I think it's fair to say we weren't, like, bullies in the traditional sense of the word, but certainly, like you said, like, outcast bullies, almost, like, outcast,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like,
but it was, like, ribbing, like, we liked him. Like,
oh,
we wouldn't
yeah,
do
of
that
course,
to someone
yeah.
we didn't like. That was, like, a way we were, like, it was almost if we made fun of you, it's because we liked you a lot. If we didn't like you, we wouldn't even
bother. There was a big camaraderie when it came to that, because you and I ripped each other all the time as
oh,
well.
Oh, terribly. All the time.
Really bad. I'm sure if you went back, you'd be like, oh, my God.
Yeah, and I think we were able to because we didn't take it personally. Like, we understood, like, the humor of it.
That's the thing. Yeah, that's
yeah,
the
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
It's about, like, I don't know. Again, we just sound like bullies reconciling
we, yeah, we're
things.
Really not. I promise we weren't.
Oh, man. I was remembering a couple things about you in high school, and I brought up that on a previous podcast on American Pie, that for some reason the both of us, for some reason, I kind of know the reason, but we both hated American Pie. And I don't know if it was because of the movie, but I think it was just because of, like, the people who liked American Pie we really didn't like.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think they tried to reflect themselves as, like, the, you know, party goers. You know what I mean? I don't know, like, the high school party crew. I can't even explain it.
Yeah, we were very anti-party.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't drink. I didn't drink in high school once.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was...
War party.
We just didn't, yeah. Like, we had our own versions of parties.
Yeah, know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that would...
And, like, you said you were in a band, Those Who Hung Heroes. Shout out.
Wow.
And I remember, you know, going to your shows, and that was fun. That was, like, a party, like, atmosphere, but not in a traditional, like, can't hardly wait party sense.
It was, like,
know?
The VFW circuit. That was a good time.
Yeah, that was cool. Like, Knights of Columbus. Like, that was fun. Like,
there was
that,
a lot of people there. That was a good time.
A lot of people. Like, the amount that you'd see on, like, a teen film high school party.
That's true. It's really accurate. Like, you didn't see that anywhere else in life, though. So, yeah, you're right.
Those were, like, some really, really fun times. I took a couple notes just of, like, West times. This might have been referenced either on my last podcast with Kyle, P.S. I Love Hoffman, or on this podcast, but there's that sister-sister drawing.
Yes.
I don't know how that came about.
Yeah, I think you would randomly sing, like, the sister, sister.
Which I still do.
Yeah, yeah, and I still do because of you. Yeah, and you handed me a note in class, and it was, like, in the font of Sister, Sister.
If you guys have seen Sister, Sister out there, you know the exact font.
Yeah. It's very distinct.
Yeah, just, like, the curly S's.
And then it was starring Tim Reed as Ray. And I tried to find it again recently. It was just too much stuff. One day I will find it again.
Please find that
again. Yeah. I do have it.
We were not bad kids. We were bad students, if that makes sense. Like, not bad. Okay, that doesn't sound good either. I don't think certain teachers liked us because we fucked around a lot.
Yeah, we did.
But not against the teachers?
No. We weren't, like, pests or class clowns, really.
We were almost, like, pre-hipster humor, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Like, kind of ties into this movie.
It
kind of does, like, encompass.
This fits really, really well.
Yeah.
One of the pranks, and I'm using quotation marks, pranks I remember us doing, is Queer Eye was big back then.
Oh, no.
And there's these computers in the back of our math class, and we changed every wallpaper background of the computer to each different Queer Eye.
Yes.
And these bright colors. Queer Eye guy, I don't know.
Yeah. It's like this, like, surreal humor in a way, like, before, like, Tim and Eric or anything, we, like, because, like, there's really no tangible joke there, but,
no,
like, it is hilarious that each member of the Queer Eye were on the computer.
And it's harmless. It's completely harmless.
Absolutely.
But it was just so fun at the time, or just, I also, we were talking about this, I think, the other day, but our old math teacher, shout out Ms. Baker.
Yes.
We used to just guess what outfit she would wear, because she had, like, a rotation of, like, 7 outfits.
Yeah.
And that's not, it wasn't, like, a
No, it's, like, understandable, like, you're a teacher, who cares? But, like, yeah, it was, like, a contest, who could guess? Was it the floral print dress? Was it the green pantsuit?
Yeah, green pantsuit. That was usually my guess.
I remember the dress and the pantsuit. I can't really recall other ones.
No, if you remember them all, that would be...
And she was, like, she liked us a lot. Like, she really, like...
I think what helped is, and I've told this story on the podcast before, like, you and I both, but especially me, did really bad in our freshman year math class.
Yes, terrible.
You and I are both, like, I would say smart guys. Like, we definitely underachieved incredibly in that math class.
I don't think I studied or did one ditto. Like, ditto. I don't know how.
I haven't heard that term in a while.
You know,
true,
like,
yeah.
I don't know how, like, I didn't fail at these. I don't know how. I never had to go to summer school. I don't know how.
I had to go that year because I did really bad.
Oh, well, I guess I got the D. I didn't have to go.
Yeah, you got the D it. I got the F one semester, and I was like, damn. But then we were in the same class the next year, and we both did pretty well.
I think so, right?
Because
it was
oh, shit. Like, we can't fuck around.
No,
but you're right. Like, I would just go into class and not even think about math in math class.
Yeah.
Like, let me just talk to my friends, and, like, this is funny. Let's just...
Remember, like, the game, the math game? And then, like, one of them looked like Nina Esposito.
Oh, my God.
That's too inside.
Yeah, because she's like, guys, I want to know.
Yeah, long story short, she was this a classmate that just wanted to know everybody's business. Yeah.
I don't know. High school was, like, fun, but I kind of wish I took it a little bit more seriously, because I feel like I would have taken then college more seriously.
Yeah, I get
that.
And
then I would have probably had a better job now. No offense to my job, but, like, you know. Like.
No, yeah. But I don't know. You could still do whatever I think you wanted to do.
Well,
but, yeah,
you.
We kind of, yes. Oh, yeah, no problem.
Asshole.
You can, yeah. I think there's, I don't know if this is proper for the podcast, like, there's something about us that, like, doesn't want to completely be normal people, because we still want to somehow, like, not be in that world in a way.
No,
that's why, like, you're
100%,
doing this podcast.
100%. Okay, we sound probably so arrogant right
now. Yeah, yeah,
no, I know exactly, like, what you mean. Like, everything everything that's like the state of normalcy. Mm-hmm. Not everything. Not at all.
No.
But like certain things are just awkward and I don't know. It's hard to explain.
Yeah.
But I think, like, as weird as it sounds, I think we're in a time that kind of accepts that more than, like, the 50s.
Of course. You know? Yeah. In the 50s, we would be, like, in jail right now.
Yeah, pretty much.
If we grew up in the 50s, yeah.
like communist anti-Americans.
Exactly, yeah.
Labeled something. No, you're right. Like, everything we're saying is just tying into the film you chose today, actually.
Yes.
So, you know, long story short, we reconnected recently, and I mentioned my podcast, and I said, you know, if you ever want to be on, love to have you on, and you mentioned this film Ghost World, and I was thinking, like, okay, I've seen this, like, once or twice on the premium cable channels,
sure.
Like HBO or whatever, Stars yeah. or something, and I'm like, why do I know this movie so well? Like, why is this the photo or the poster of this movie, like, ingrained in my head? And I realized that in your, I guess, post... You know, not high school apartment, because obviously, but like your 20s apartment.
Yeah, like first, like adult, adult in quotes, apartment.
You had a poster of this film. And
I do. I still have it. It's in my new apartment.
Which is awesome. That's what I think. I was like, oh, okay. That's how I know Ghost World.
I got that at a Goodwill in Bergenfield for $5. It's an original print. It's amazing.
Oh, from the theater.
Yes.
Wow, that's really cool.
It's worth about $20. No one wants it, so I'm very happy about it.
So why Ghost World? Why did you pick Ghost World? I imagine you... very much enjoy this film. So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just relate to Enid a lot in the sense that, like, to go back to our prior conversation, the theme of, like, accepting adulthood or accepting the path you're supposed to take and trying to figure out your identity within the world. So, yeah, basically, yeah, and this movie kind of counts because it's transitional. It begins at the end of high school, but Enid does have to go to summer school. So
yeah, exactly.
I kind of snuck it in.
All you haters out there say this is not a high school film. One, like you said, there's a graduation, there's a school dance. And Enid technically, as you said, did not graduate.
Exactly,
and for the majority of the film, has to take her last high school class.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think it's about an important time, too, in high schoolers' lives, like after graduation. Whether you go to college or not, it's just like a weird time. I wasn't ready for it. Like, I wasn't mature enough for, like, my transition. And you guys listening probably from everything else we're telling you, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But, like, I wasn't ready. And you could tell Enid is not ready, you know?
No. She's not at all. She doesn't even want to get, like, a day job, which, you know, I relate to as well. Still to this day, even though I've had a prior career to what I'm doing now.
But I want to know, when was the first time you saw this film, Ghost World? You were way ahead of the curve if you're watching this film, like...
Yeah,
around when this came out.
What year was it released again?
2001.
2001.
So, like, we were, like, freshmen.
Yeah, I don't think I saw it then. I think I saw it maybe my senior year of high school, so
wow.
In 2005. I think I rented it because of the cover.
That's, like, a big theme of this show. I always say this, but when you're a kid or, like, even in high school, you just walk into Blockbuster, and it's such a visual, like, visceral experience, because you see all these, like, covers, and that's, you're judging every movie by its cover, almost.
Of course.
And, you know, you're just like, oh, that looks cool. That looks like it gets me.
And at that point, I think I was already in films or taking films class, so I was too cool for the movies on the wall at Blockbuster, because those were the new releases.
Yeah, the sidewall.
Yeah, so, and then the center was the older films. That's where I would go, because that's, like, where the good movies are, and I think I found it there, because at that point, it was obviously a couple years old already.
Isn't it so cool when you're that age and you discover, like, a non-mainstream good film?
Amazing.
Like, it feels so good. Like,
yeah. I'm trying to think of the movie that made me realize that there's not just, like, kids' movies or, like, beyond that. But, yeah, once you find that, it's great.
Yeah, you mentioned films class. So we had a teacher, Mr. Housley.
Yes.
And he, like, I think he introduced a lot of the grade to, like, mainstream films. I look back now, but they didn't feel like mainstream. They were like Deep Impact, you know?
Yes, exactly.
like Eternal Sunshine.
Sure.
Lost in Translation. Mm-hmm. You know, like films like that were like, oh, okay. Like one I remember seeing, like, Motorcycle Diaries. Like, I went to the theater to see Motorcycle Diaries.
Me too.
Like,
I went with Scuduto. We didn't know it was going to be in Spanish. And then
we
started laughing. You know? We're like, oh, great.
But then, like, you know, you start getting into, like, these kind of films, and it just... I say that's, like, for a lot of film nerds, which is a lot of people listen to this podcast, obviously. Yeah. It's such an awesome, like, transitional time. Like, again, I hadn't seen this movie until I was an adult. But, like, a real adult. But I could see how this movie, like, the first time you saw it, it's like, would just... You could connect to it so much.
Absolutely.
And then there's movies, like, that I watch that I still love, like High Fidelity, that, like, I felt like I connected back then, but there's no possible way I connected as, like, a freshman or sophomore in high school
to a
movie about, like, a guy going over, like, five of his breakups, you know? Now I connect to it a lot more.
Yeah, sure.
But
then, yeah, there's really no frame of reference. It was almost... It was like, romantic to relate to something like that in a way.
Yeah,
like,
because it was not... Deep Impact or a kids movie.
Exactly. Yeah, it was like in the middle, like before. Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
So on this show, you brought up Blockbuster. Wait, didn't you work at Blockbuster at one point?
I worked at Blockbuster for a couple of years.
That's a cool experience.
It was. I never did so little and so much at the same time. We literally just hung out and watched movies.
Which is so cool. For the kids out there, again, they're probably not listening to this podcast, but for like the kids out there growing up who are never going to know what a Blockbuster is, like you worked inside Netflix. Like, you know?
Basically, like, it's the weirdest thing.
Like,
I had people that would come and like ask for my opinion. Like, they'd come. You know what I mean? It was like a community almost. I've met friends. I still have a friend. My friend Dave I met. He's at Blockbuster.
We're the Netflix and chill generation or whatever, but I think that's something... people are missing that maybe like podcasts and certain like blogs and websites are like filling in that void. But before, like your film community was like your Blockbuster friends.
Absolutely, yeah, totally.
Which was great. So every week I read either the back of the VHS cover or the back of the DVD cover. So this one is DVD because it's like it's still the DVD generation.
Yes.
Maybe Blu-ray, I'm not sure, but. I don't think people bought this.
I think they just put
Blu-ray.
It on Criterion recently.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Which I'm assuming they did Blu-ray. If they didn't, then it's kind of pointless. Who buys DVDs?
who really buys Blu-rays either?
No, exactly. But if you're going to put it out, it's got to be the Blu-ray.
Yeah. Because
especially this movie, because the color palette's really nice.
Yeah, for sure. The only people who are buying Blu-rays are people who are collecting.
Collectors, exactly. So
here's the back of the DVD. And it's honestly probably the longest one we've ever had.
Interesting.
It's like two paragraphs that just repeat itself, but I'll read it now. They're high school graduates, and the world's got hell to pay. Hot new talents, Thora Birch and Scarlett Johansson, sneak into your heart and stay there in this uproaring... I think, but I don't think I wrote it right. But whatever. We'll say uproaringly funny from the acclaimed director of Crumb. With Brad Renfro, Alina Douglas, and Steve Buscemi in the best role of his career, this whip-smart comedy is a surprise gem. While their classmates heads for college, Enid and Rebecca focus their energies on tormenting those around them.
No.
From a goofy convenience store clerk to an eccentric art teacher, these two saboteurs wreak havoc on all who cross their paths.
Some executive wrote this. There's no way the filmmakers wrote this. Sorry to cut you off.
But when... No, please. I love it. But when they zero in on an oddball loner looking for Miss Wright, their seemingly innocent meddling threatens to shatter one of their hearts, not to mention their lifelong friendship.
Yeah, it's like not the movie.
So we've noticed on this podcast that most people who write these... seems like they've never seen the film.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's like they look at the cover. Oh, that seems right.
Yeah, yeah. Or like they scroll through it, like they're in some office at like whatever.
Absolutely. Like there's a lot of repetitiveness, and that the back here makes it seem more like a farce.
It does.
Than what it is.
And also makes it sound like that Enid and Rebecca are just going around town just like messing with people. Like it just obviously like there's part of that, but like it just doesn't make sense.
But I think again these were more targeted where like now we want to know what a movie's like. We watch the trailer, but back then it was just based on
the cover. That's true, yeah, because you couldn't go online really and watch a trailer yet.
That seems more fun, I guess you could say, for like the more mainstream viewer.
It would get more people to buy it.
Yeah,
sure.
Like, oh, this seems like a fun film. Like, it's colorful and a lot of hijinks, you know?
Yeah.
But that's not it at all. If the back said something along the lines of like a really like sobering reality tale of, you know, I'm just like over-exaggerating.
Yeah.
Probably not going to sell.
Yeah. Probably not. Or misanthropic lead character and her silly dad. I don't know.
Okay, so let's run through this cast. Thora Birch is our lead here. She plays Enid.
Yes.
American Beauty. She's also in Hocus Pocus.
She is.
Is a favorite
girl.
Of a lot of people.
Definitely a good film.
And also the film Now and Then, which I know is one of your favorites.
I don't recall it.
It's like a film with like four women.
It's about candy?
No. About candy.
Oh, Now and Later. Sorry. I just bombed. I tried
No, it's like four women and like their present self and their past self.
Was that Rosie O'Donnell?
Yeah, Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh, man. Yeah. I remember that.
Melanie Griffith. Griffin. Is that her name?
Griffith. Yeah. Melanie Griffith.
Yeah.
Right? Griffith. Whatever.
And I think Christina Ricci is one of the girls as well. Speaking of Christina Ricci, she was the one that people originally suggested to play Enid.
Okay.
But then they said she was too old. But I could still see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The studio suggested before Thora Birch, Claire Danes, or Jennifer Love Hewitt, which I can't really see.
No, definitely not Jennifer Love Hewitt. She's like, yeah, definitely not her. She's too pretty.
She's too pretty and like lovable. Like, yeah, I never hate Jennifer Love Hewitt, because even when I hate Jennifer Love Hewitt as like the popular girl,
yeah,
you like don't really like.
Because like she always played the popular girl that was like nice to the geeks.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like she always played that character. And then Claire Danes, I just can't see her being like play like an alternative character like that.
No, like now, like her stuff is a little bit more like that, but just doesn't she doesn't have like the aesthetic. Like Thora Birch, I think great.
Yeah, like, and I think she had to gain a lot. She gained a lot of weight.
Yeah, she gained 20 pounds for it, but she doesn't look like.
No, she looks good. I mean, yeah, like I don't. Yeah. She's got big heavies.
Maybe she was like very.
I think she's really. I mean, like, she's really thin.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Honestly, I think she does an awesome job.
Yeah, she's great.
And Scarlett Johansson as
Yeah, we haven't seen her much since this movie.
Yeah.
But she does a great performance in this.
She's actually, like, really, really awesome in this, too, as Rebecca, obviously, again. Mm-hmm. She's a superstar now. But she hadn't done much before this. The only things that I recognized before this were The Horse Whisperer.
I was going to say, wasn't this some horse thing? Yeah.
And Home Alone 3, she's apparently.
I've never seen that.
So, Steve Buscemi, I think one of your favorites.
He's great, yeah. I like him.
He plays Seymour, because you're a Sopranos guy.
Yeah, I mean, okay, Brian.
Okay,
yeah. No, yeah, I mean, yeah, I love The Sopranos, and he is in one season of The Sopranos, that is true.
What's his name?
He's Tony.
Oh, he's Tony.
Tony B? Tony B.
Tony, yes.
Tony Uncle something.
Uncle Tony. Other Uncle Tony.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Ichabod Crane. That's what they make fun of him.
Boardwalk Empire.
Which I only saw the first season, not a big fan of.
Steve Buscemi's an interesting guy, because, like, I was looking at his IMDb, and, I mean, obviously I know.
Oh, he was a firefighter in 9/11. Yeah. No one mentions that ever. Just kidding, everybody mentions that.
But he was a long-time firefighter, too. And he got his start in the, that whole, like, East Village, No Wave film movement.
Okay.
With, like, you know, CBGB, Blondie kind of stuff.
Sure, yeah.
Which
is,
like, that's, like, a pretty cool place to get your start, and then...
Yeah, I played there a couple times.
What... Oh, it's a shoe store now.
Yeah. So. No, go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off.
But he's like done. He's done so many films.
Yeah, he's prolific in a way.
I don't think people like really knew his name until not even this film. I don't think he was a household name. I think until like Boardwalk Empire and like.
You think?
Like
I mean, to me, I did, but we did because we watched a lot of movies, and I know him from the Adam Sandler movies. I guess that's the really
that's
the
where
first,
like I
putting
exactly.
the lipstick on.
Yeah, putting the lipstick on is like the first like visions of him, or like a Big Daddy.
Yeah.
Also, there's that film Airheads, too.
True.
He's worked with every big director.
Yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
Not Spielberg. I can't think of, like, a Spielberg
Probably
film.
Not.
But, you know, he's in Fargo.
He doesn't look like he'd be in a Spielberg film.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't have that. He just has such a unique look. And I think it says, like, his best role in this. I don't know about that.
No. I wouldn't say that at
but
all. But
I think he does an awesome job.
Oh,
as
he's
well.
Fantastic. I can't picture anybody else really playing
no,
this guy.
No, absolutely not.
Would you say that he's a character actor? I feel like he is, but he, like, he, like, surpasses the idea of just being a character actor.
He's a character actor, but he's not...
Do you know what I mean? I
like,
don't know.
He's still always Steve Buscemi, but I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, not at all.
You know,
yeah,
like Ellen's always Ellen. Like, not that
of course.
In a lot of films, but you know what I mean. Like,
yeah, Ellen, great reference.
I don't know, I'm trying to think.
Fucking Ellen.
There are always people who are always people. Even, okay, 9 times out of 10, Julia Roberts is Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
That doesn't make her
terrible.
Bad.
No, she sucks.
Okay, I try to be nice.
Fuck Julia Roberts.
But Steve Buscemi always, like, puts his own twist on a character, but he definitely is playing, like... characters and sometimes really out there characters.
Yeah.
He said this character made him so uncomfortable that he immediately changed his clothes at the end of the day.
Really?
After every scene, which is funny, but
it's interesting.
I think it was like the him and like the 18-year-old thing, probably.
Oh, maybe.
Not that it was illegal because she
no,
was like,
yeah,
age, but it's still kind of like weird.
Yeah. I guess because he's, I don't know. I guess you can consider him. I don't, but I guess from the outsider's view, he could be pathetic in a way.
Oh yeah, for sure.
With his roommate and stuff, yeah, so.
Now, I can't believe it's taken us this long to mention it, but Ghost World is based on a graphic novel, a very famous graphic novel.
It's my favorite comic book movie.
I was going to say, is it?
Yes.
I guess, technically, right?
Yeah.
I know you're a big Fantastic Four guy, but
the newest one is fantastic, though. It lives up to its name. Redundant as I am. Yeah, it's fantastic. Can't think of a better adjective. I hate myself.
Have you read the graphic novel?
I have.
Okay, I'm not a big graphic novel guy.
I read it like a decade ago, maybe. It's different, but it's the same.
Yeah, apparently one of the biggest changes is Seymour, who is not as big of a character in that.
Yeah, it's more about Enid and Rebecca, I suppose, and I can't really remember, but yeah, it's not exactly the same.
I mean, I like the artwork in it, from what I see, but again...
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, I only read it because I liked the movie.
Which, fun fact about, like, the graphic novel, it's the first comic or graphic novel to ever be nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Interesting.
Which is, we're in, like, such a comic book age now, and it happens from time to time. The Wolverine was just nominated.
Makes sense.
But, like, yeah, so I thought that was pretty cool.
So wait, is it called The Wolverine?
The newest one.
It's called The Wolverine?
No. Fuck.
I can't think of the name. Logan. There we go, Logan.
The second.
Yeah, which was... Is that when he goes to, like, Japan? That movie's bad.
Yeah. Whoa, I was wrong. Yeah. No, The Wolverine is the second one.
Yeah.
Logan was nominated. Logan. I don't think The Wolverine was nominated.
I hope not. I wouldn't be surprised.
What's the first one? That one wasn't good either. Logan was good, but the first one, I don't remember.
Yeah, I only think of Logan being good.
Like, I think that was, like, the consensus.
Yeah.
So Brad Renfro played Josh.
Yeah.
And all I know is he died at 25.
He did. He died young.
Rest in peace. And he was on the film Tom and Huck.
And did you ever see Bully?
Bully.
Bully's crazy.
Is it a high school film?
I think they're still in high school.
Gotta write that down. No, I haven't seen that one.
They might be just out. Yeah, I think they're still in high school. It's set in Florida. It's one of the craziest movies ever.
Really? Wow.
It's really creepy and violent, but not creepy in a horror movie.
You might have to come back for that.
They're just despicable people in that movie. It's based on a real true story.
Wow. Bully, writing it down.
There's murder and creepy sex stuff in it, and it just
really up
the director.
Alley.
I can't think of his name. I think he did Larry Clark.
Larry Clark,
who
okay.
makes those like kind of weird movies.
Yeah,
like he did
yeah.
Gummo and all that. Bully's crazy.
That's cool. Definitely gotta check it out.
Yeah.
So we have Alina Douglas as Roberta,
Ileana,
the art teacher.
I think it is.
Ileana, is it?
Ileana, I think it is.
I've definitely seen her before, but I don't remember from what.
She's in Cape Fear.
Good
one. He bites her. she was actually, I think she was with Scorsese for like a decade. Like there were a couple for
oh, really?
A long time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good fact. Then you have a guy like Bob Balaban as Enid's dad.
Oh, yeah, he's hilarious.
Yeah, and he's like perfect for this role as well.
Yeah, it's like him. I met him in real life. That's what
he's someone who always plays like him.
Yeah. You know? I can't even think of anything else he's been in. I know I've seen him, but offhand, I can't think of anything.
Yeah, he's just here and there. He's
yeah,
in like stuff. He's in like Wes Anderson films. Like
true.
Like, random
okay. Yeah,
characters.
Yeah, gotcha.
Then he ends up dating Maxine, played by Terry Garr.
Yeah.
The note was that they're both in Close Encounters of the Third Kind together. So apparently they're in that, but I don't remember that. I remember her, but I don't remember him.
Yeah, I know.
Who else did I write down? Oh, David Cross, like, appears.
Yeah, he does.
At some point.
At the party.
Dave Sheridan is a guy who plays that convenience store weirdo.
Oh, yeah. And I think he's done that role again in, like, the Chili Peppers video or something.
Yeah, apparently this is, like, a shtick, and he was somebody suggested by Mike Judge, which makes so much sense.
He looks like a Mike Judge character.
Yeah, he looks like he's fucking a character in Beavis and Butthead.
Totally.
Like, it was drawn in there. So.
Absolutely.
When I read that note, I'm like, I have to say this, because, like, that's... It's, like,
yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's literally out of that world. Like, he stepped out of that and into the ghost world.
And then you mentioned the director...
There's also I don't know his name, but Seymour's roommate is the, I just know
oh,
him
yeah.
from Heavyweights.
Heavyweights he's in. He's also in The Birdcage.
Is he? I don't recall.
He's
him.
Like the reporter like tracking them down.
That's funny.
But he's like has like scenes like that scene. He's like the same guy in like films too.
Yeah,
he's not
yeah.
that guy, but yeah, I've definitely seen him a lot too.
Totally.
Like I said, directed by wait, how do you say the guy's name?
I think it's Zwigoff, Terry Zwigoff. Yeah. That's how I always say it.
All right, directed by Terry Zwigoff. Yeah, I mean, he's a name I know, but he hasn't done too much. I mean, he's most famous, as I said before, for Crumb. Have you seen Crumb?
Of course, yeah, I've seen that.
I haven't seen Crumb in a very long time.
I enjoyed it. I just remember that family being crazy. Like, the whole family's really weird.
I saw Crumb, like, at, I think, like, me trying to be smart phase. Like,
okay.
A long time, not a long time ago, probably, like, college, you know?
Sure.
Like, oh, this is an interesting piece. And I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah.
But I think this is his first, like,
Feature,
like fictional feature.
I think so. I think you're totally right about that.
And then he did another movie that I saw.
He did Art School Confidential, another... he did it with Daniel Klaus.
Yeah, which is the writer of the graphic novel, and he co-wrote this screenplay as well. Which, have you seen Art School Confidential?
Yeah, it's a miss on me. I remember I watched it once, and it just didn't really do much.
It definitely was one of those movies I rented because of the cover.
Sure.
For some reason, when I think of Art School Confidential, I think of The Squid and the Whale, even though they're not, like...
No, Squid and the Whale's a good movie.
I know, but I definitely, like, rented them.
It was probably around the same time.
Yeah, like, rented them around the same time. Yeah. Like, let me rent this and this, you know?
When there was, like, that new uprising of, like, independent directors.
Yeah, like, Focus Features.
Focus Features. Like, yeah, I would watch anything Focus Features. That was my shit back in the day.
It really was.
Yeah.
Like, it was so cool, like, you put in the Focus Features DVD, and then it showed, like, all the other Focus Features film. Like, shit, I'm watching The Science of Sleep tomorrow.
Yes, exactly. Science of Sleep. That's so funny. I hear that, like, that music they have for the Focus Features, like Pavlov's Dog, like, my head is turned towards that like, sound or whatever.
That movie's gonna make me think.
Side note, Art School Confidential, the waiter in Ghost World at the 50s Diner is naked in Art School Confidential.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's, like, one of the nude artists, and it's so creepy. That's all I remember about
that guy. Is it, like, a very interesting look?
Ooh. Yes. It's somebody like you don't want to see owl, naked. Yeah, they call them weird out.
And this is a movie that I think largely kind of, besides for like that artistic crowd and the indie film fan crowd, like went under the radar because this is not a movie a lot of people talk about.
No, yeah.
But if you look at the consensus on Rotten Tomatoes, it's 92% like positive by critics.
Is it really? That's
and
crazy.
84% by the audience, which is really high. But like, who is the audience?
I don't know, because like people love to love independent movies like this. You know what I mean? Like it's like something you would think more people would talk about.
My like barometer for the mainstream is like, would my mom like this movie?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't mean like.
And see, my mom would probably not understand this movie.
Oh,
Not like hate, like, oh, this movie like sucks so bad, but she's like,
she can't relate to this.
Like the end would be like,
wait, get it. Yeah, yeah.
It's over, you know?
Totally, no, absolutely.
So I was a little surprised seeing like the 84% audience score, but the 92% critics didn't surprise me because like it's a really like realistic film to me, believe it or not, and a really like pretty film. Like the palette is
It's great.
It's not...
It's a bit oversaturated, but, like, in a good way. Like, the colors are...
Yeah, I think that's, like, purposeful.
Yeah, I think they were trying to, without making it cheesy, make it look a little bit more like a comic.
It wasn't, like, the panels, you know?
No, yeah. Like, was that one American Splendor or something? I think they did,
that one does it. Or, you know, like, the Eric Bana Hulk film.
Oh, my God.
Like, 9 Hulks ago.
Yeah.
Like, people...
Hulk has never worked as a standalone.
The one, I liked the one, which is really pretty, though it's really a Thor film, the newest Thor film I like.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying like a standalone Hulk movie, like the Norton Hulk. One or
no, because the Banner one. I don't think they even did, because there was the,
there was Ed, the Banner, yeah, like you said, the Ed Norton,
that's it, right? Like they haven't done a solo, they haven't done a Ruffalo solo.
Not every character needs to have their own solo movie.
But people get mad. Should Black Widow get a solo? Because that's like, that's topical today. And
it
that's
is.
Like a...
I mean, if she's going to wear those pants, I'll watch it. Stupid. I really don't care. I won't watch it, actually. I lied.
No, I don't know. Like, it's not about her or anything like that. It's just, some people are just better on the team.
Yeah, like, not everyone has to be, like...
Because even the Thor one that I thought was good was not just, like, Thor hanging out. Like, you know, Hulk was there and other people were there, but...
Yeah, yeah. This is another conversation, I
suppose. Hey, it's comic book film day.
True.
Okay. The 300, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so cool.
So, let's get into some scenes and some topics. I just wrote a couple scenes down to discuss. First of all, we should discuss, because it is one of the most high school scenes, and that's like why we're here. It's just like that whole graduation.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Which, again, I love.
And I have learned that to overcome life's obstacles, you need faith, hope, and above all, a sense of humor.
God. bunch of retards.
God, I know. I thought that chipmunk face was never going to shut up.
I know. I liked her so much better when she was an alcoholic crack addict. Mm. She gets in one car wreck and all of a sudden she's Little Miss Perfect and everyone loves her.
Let's see if they give me the right diploma.
What?
What?
These assholes are saying I have to go to summer school and take some stupid art class.
Why?
God, I didn't think that just because you get an F, you have to take the whole class over again.
Loser.
Because graduations are so, like, awkward to begin with, and a lot of people, like, congratulating you for, like, I don't want to say, like, what did you do, but, like, most people graduate. Like,
yeah, of course. I think they even make that joke. Like, oh, what an amazing achievement, we graduated
high
school.
Yeah, and I love that about it. It's so, like, realistic in that sense. But, oh, that speaker who's, like from a car accident.
Oh, yeah, and they make a joke about her. And also that dance crew. It's, like, oh, so realistic. God. There'd be some terrible, like, dance crew that's cringeworthy.
Yeah. Oh. So bad. Like, the injured girl or whatever is perfect because... And we don't need to name names because I know we went to the same high school, but I just mean this...
There was the injured
in
kid.
General. There's always somebody who had some kind of either injury or breakdown or something who might not have been a really great person before that, but suddenly they came back and everyone treats them like a saint.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's frustrating, you know?
It is.
And people deserve second chances. I'm not saying they don't, but it's also like, it's frustrating.
Yes, yeah.
And they depict that so well. And then, like you said, this dance troupe is so perfect for the time, like 2001.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, just like spitting out the 90s, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Like, no one would dance like that now at a high school, but there would be a dance. You know what I mean? Like,
something, whatever. Like, we're not, like,
performance.
In
yeah, I have no idea, like, what high school is like.
Like, 17-year-olds, so we don't know, like, what they're liking. But it would be something along with it.
Yeah, probably just sending nude Snapchats and, I don't know.
Pretty much what the kids do, I've heard.
Yeah.
Oh, and then, like, you go right, kind of, to that dance. That, like, post-graduation
dance. Yeah, that
post, dance.
Like, the party. Yeah.
Did you go to any dances in high school? Mm-hmm. I don't, like, remember you
Was there dances in high school?
In high school, yeah.
The only thing I went, like, to, I went to senior year prom for about an hour and a half.
You don't seem like the prom guy.
I think my mom was just like, you gotta go. I don't know.
And probably, like if my, I don't have a kid, but if I theoretically have a kid, it's like, should I go to prom? I'd be like, yeah, go to prom, but, like, stay as long as you want. Do what you want. You don't have to, like, go through all the motions. Wear whatever you want to wear within reason.
Yeah.
Not like a shirt with an AK-47 on it.
No. Like, or like that really funny shirt that people wear where, like, it's a t-shirt, but it looks like a tuxedo.
No, I hope that's not my son.
I love those shirts. They're so funny.
Oh, they used to call you Mr. Hot Topic.
They did. No one called me that. You're an asshole.
Yeah, you were just joking.
Like, everyone called you Mr. Aeropostale or whatever.
I did wear a lot
did
of
Did you really?
Aeropostale.
I just guessed.
Like, freshman year, I wore, like, a lot of Aeropostale.
Yeah, I mean, of course I got stuff at, but I got band t-shirts at Hot Topic, but I would mostly go down to, like, St. Mark's or, like, the West Village.
No. Like, Hot Topic, though, is a really, really funny place because I think, and it's still around, and it still apparently does very well.
I think so, yeah, I mean.
But the mall is such an alien concept to me these days.
Absolutely.
I don't think malls are as popular as they were.
The trend about malls now are dead malls, and, like, there's a lot of people, like, on YouTube, like, they'll go to, like, a dead mall and, like, like, walk around, and they're kind of cool because they have, like, these 80s aesthetic and stuff.
It is such a weird, like, place, like,
yeah.
Neon or, like,
yeah. Carpet. A lot of the where we grew up, those malls were renovated, I think, but, like, there's areas of the U.S. where, like, there wasn't the money to do so all the malls still look have that
you
aesthetic.
You know, I think in high school we went to the Bergen Mall, remember that?
That's
like
one.
Before they renovated it, but
yes.
That was, like, a dead mall.
The basement with the church.
Oh, and there was a church in the basement, as well as, like, a Magic the Gathering, like, games
Village,
workshop
yeah.
place.
Totally.
And they were, like, painting the models, and we saw, like, roaches. Was, wow. That's,
was
like,
awesome.
The decay of, like, the 80s, like, Reagan.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Reagan America decaying into something else, you know. Reagan Clinton America, we'll say. We don't want to get political.
Yeah, no.
Oh, yeah, no. But, like, places like Hot Topic, or it was, like, the Zoomies.
Zoomies.
Yeah.
You know, PacSun, even before. PacSun got big because Blink-182, like, the Hurley t-shirts.
Oh,
and
yeah.
All that.
No, it's true. And it's... It's funny because now I would imagine it's a lot easier to kind of be I don't want to say counterculture. That sounds
well,
like
yeah, because
so,
you could go like, online. Like, if I wanted to find like yes. a band T-shirt, like I had to go and find it. Like,
yeah.
If I wanted a Specials T-shirt, I literally walked around like Canal Street or whatever, Broadway and Canal.
Exactly, and it wasn't. And we're lucky that we live near the city. And I know we've talked about this before. You and I both had parents who were like somewhat either from the city mm-hmm. or like knew the city well. But
yeah,
we grew up with a lot of kids whose parents were like, "You never go into the city."
Yeah,
you know?
And we grew up really close to it too. It seems far,
like
but
20 minutes.
Yeah, 20 minutes, and you could be you know over the GWB.
But there, yeah, again, it was a different time.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I mean, probably more dangerous when we were going in, but it wasn't like crazy, crazy dangerous as certain people that we grew up with thought it was.
Of course. Yeah.
And we could find that kind of stuff. I remember, like, it sounds weird, like, going to Soho and buying band T-shirts because
yeah.
now, like, that even, like, Soho now, Soho then was, like, not even, like, grungy.
No.
But Soho
yeah.
now you can't really
no,
do that.
Yeah, absolutely not.
But I remember going in and like finding these stores and
yeah.
this is like there was that one like Yellow Rat Bastard.
Yes, Yellow Rat Bastard.
And then
of course.
It became like a mall store.
And then there was Yellow Rat and then Canal Jeans was another big one. It was
yeah.
like, remember Canal Jeans?
Yeah.
Where I got a lot of shirts.
Or like there was like there used to be a lot more like Army Navy Surplus.
Army Navy Surplus were the best. I think there's the only one left where the Grace of Papaya used to be like next to it in the West Village. Remember
oh,
that?
Really?
Yeah. I
That's
think there's
cool.
one more Army Navy store there.
Yeah, no, I remember like a lot of those disappearing. I bought this. Oh, and someone stole it in high school.
Oh, no.
I bought this cool NATO issued like side bag. Like,
yeah.
It was like a medic's bag. It
yeah,
had the
awesome.
Medic symbol, and I loved it. And like an idiot, you and I both had, like were kind of like a little messy at times. It's more me.
If you looked at my backpack, it looked like a hurricane. I'll
yes,
get it. Like,
backpack-wise,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, all mess.
So my backpack was a terrible thing, so I couldn't like fit more stuff in it, so I would leave stuff. We had like a lost and found shelf by the cafeteria, so I'd just leave my excess stuff there.
Oh, no.
And then eventually the bag got stolen, and I'm like, surprise, surprise. Like,
yeah,
I
used
that
think?
As my auxiliary locker.
That's so funny.
It was super hard to dress the way you really, really wanted to dress.
I could not. It was like now skinny jeans are everywhere.
Well, you can't not have
skinny
jeans
in the day,
at Walmart.
Yeah, yeah. Back in the day in high school when I, you know, I would look at like pictures of like the Clash, like I wanted those like tight jeans or tight pants. They were like impossible to find. Almost, I had to wear, we'd end up buying girls' pants. That's what we had to do. We had
That's
to buy
so funny.
Girls' pants. Yeah, so absolutely. It was like a mission to find certain things.
I would like look for like old stuff from relatives,
mm-hmm.
you know, like stuff at garage sales that people
totally.
would throw, be like throwing out,
mm-hmm.
you know? And
yeah, I remember you like with the blazers and stuff. Like, yeah, like I remember your look too, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was very different than my look now, but I definitely like would have a lot of blazers, a lot of like.
In a nice way. You dress nice. Yeah.
Graphic tees.
Yeah.
But not like. I grew out of the Aeropostale graphic tees. I'm
Absolutely.
More like.
Yeah.
Like Wonder Bread.
That's so
like
funny.
That,
yeah. Before those were like around too. Like
Yeah. And then they became like really mainstream. But it sounds silly.
I think when we're talking about this, we don't want to come off as like, it's like really mainstream or not cool. We're just like saying it how it was. Like it was hard
to how
find
it was
stuff.
And what we wanted to be and what aesthetic we want to have.
Yeah.
And it's related to this film because we look at it now and watching this film. And both Enid and Rebecca, especially early movie Rebecca,
mm-hmm.
are like wearing these cool clothes. But back in 2001, their clothing was outrageous, probably.
Yeah.
Like, but now it's not as weird.
No. There was always like, you'd see the one girl dressed as like a punk rocker or something. But like now, like alternative, like I'll see people like dressed sort of like punk rocky and they don't even know they're dressing that way.
No, not at all.
So many people wear like the button up shirts with like the Doc Martens. And it's like, I don't think you know. You're dressed like
no.
a white supremacist. Or you don't even know it. You look like like a Nazi punk.
No, but it's, I kind of like the fashion of now, believe it or not, versus like the fashion of where we grew up, because like you said, like they don't know what they're doing, but it's
mm-hmm.
still cooler than like
yeah okay
Abercrombie years,
of course,
or even like in our early 20s it was like people were into like the clubbing aesthetic a lot more,
I guess. Yeah, I didn't really talk to people
but it was like the
no yeah I
like
know
the starchy
mean.
Striped shirts with like the starchy collars, you know, like
sure yeah the whole like what was that called, that show, Jersey Shore,
yeah, Jersey Shore. But like, what happened to those club people? They didn't disappear.
Like
the hipsters and like
yeah,
the club
yeah.
people merged.
I think so. Yeah. Even like hipster, I think, is different now than when it was a couple years ago.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
I guess my point of like bringing this all up and saying this is that like this movie's really ahead of its time when it comes to like I just, like the fashion and just like the people they kind of are.
Yeah, even the music she listens to.
The music in this film is like great and like from the like Buscemi's old music collection. I'm not saying I'm into that kind of music.
No,
I'm not
going to
pretend that I
know
all that stuff.
I don't listen to Howlin' Wolf.
But it's just like the whole vinyl thing. You
know? Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely. Like the high fidelity vinyl and the cracks. That part, the vinyl party's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh God, that's a great scene. That's a great scene.
Even the way Edith gets her music, she has to go to the tape trading guy, who you see later in the movie, who makes fun of her for dressing like a punk rocker. Like, she had it, because, like, even the music she was listening to wasn't mainstream at the time, so she kind of had to search it out before the internet to find it.
Yeah, which is, again, awesome. And I love that whole scene, and, you know, she dyes her hair green, and she comes in, she looks like a punk.
Yeah.
And how just everyone is just not feeling it.
Dude, this is authentic.
It's great on, like, so many levels, because, like, fuck them, but also a little bit fuck her, you know?
Sure. Yeah, totally.
But, you know, she's a kid. Like, and that's... I think she looks cool.
Yeah, she does, yeah.
Well, I want to get into just, like, basically what the crux of this film is with Seymour.
Sure.
In terms of, like... While the whole summary, I wouldn't say, is accurate, it is true in a sense.
It hits beats, of course.
Yeah. Where Seymour is just, like, this, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of a loser. Guy, certainly not the social butterfly, if you will. They see like an ad in the paper.
Yes, it was like a like Missed Encounters.
Yeah, like that would be on like Craigslist. Not even now, because Craigslist I don't think is a thing, but like Craigslist like 10 years ago.
Craigslist, yeah, they took away all like dating stuff.
And he has some like a misconnection, right?
Yes,
like, that's what it's called. Like, it's a misconnection ad.
Something. Yeah, yeah.
And they decide to kind of prank the guy. He goes to meet, and obviously they stand him up, but. And then they go to his, like, garage sale thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, they pretend to be the girl in the ad, or Enid does in the voicemail, to meet them at the diner. And then they just watch him sit there for a while. And it's, like, just sad because he's waiting for a date that's not coming.
Yeah. Which they're laughing at, but, you know. I mean.
No, it's funny, but at the same time, it's really mean. There's a great line in that scene, too. He's drinking a milkshake, and Enid goes, why is he drinking a big glass of milk? Brad Renfro's character is like, it's a milkshake.
I love the like little lines like that, you know? As much as I like Enid and I relate to her as a character, there's so many lines she says that are just like... stuff I've definitely said, too. Like, just kind of trying to be cool, for lack of a better word. Not accepted cool, but like...
Yeah, yeah.
Like a line like that. Yeah, it's like perfect. It's just like... Like, lay off. He's drinking a milkshake.
Yeah.
So we have the whole, like, vinyl thing where they go to the garage sale. At first, she kind of pretends to be into the vinyls, but then...
Just to talk with him. Because, like, she finds him to be, like, this really weird person.
I like when they learn his name's Seymour, and she turns to... and she, like, mouths, like, Seymour. Like, and then they build, like, Enid, not really Rebecca. Rebecca the whole time is kind of like, you're weird. This is weird.
Yeah. You could tell, like whether they're still, like, hanging on to high school or whatever. Like, she's in on the drug with Enid. Like, they go to the diner and they see their friend from high school or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And they see the Satanists.
Totally hang out.
We
should also mention, like, Rebecca and her, like, neither of them are going to college, which they kind of mentioned at the dance. And their plan is to move out together, get real jobs.
Yeah, just be on their own.
And just be on their own and kind of escape their weird family lives. Do we ever learn about Rebecca's family life in this?
I'm going to assume it's normal.
Yeah, we don't really hear
about it. Yeah, you don't. But
Enid's obviously lives with her dad.
You don't know about her mom.
Don't know about her mom. Eventually, as we mentioned, like the dad starts dating, I guess, an old girlfriend.
Yeah.
Maxine,
who's just
It's so weird, like, just speaking of someone whose parents are divorced, it's always weird to see your parent, like, with somebody else, no matter, like, how many years have passed.
Sure,
and, like,
yeah.
That line that Maxine has is like, oh, I'm curious, something along the lines, like, I'm curious of what you're doing. I feel like, you know, I had a little bit of a part.
Yeah, it can help. I think I had, like, a hand in your upbringing.
I get
terrible.
Like,
and
I get
she's
the look
with those glasses. Yeah. She's just like horrendous.
Shut up! Yes, like, shut up! Like anyone would say that.
I think she said Enid says something like totally like sarcastic.
Yeah, like
terrible.
I'm taking like again I'm quoting. I believe she says something along the lines of like I'm taking a remedial art class for retards.
Yes,
like that.
There you go.
Oh God,
that's pretty much it. It's so funny.
So you know, like definitely Enid wants to escape, whereas Rebecca is like so geared on finding the job.
Yeah.
Is
so, like, Rebecca wants to do it, and she's working towards it. She gets a job, and Edith wants to do it, but she doesn't want to do any of the work that you have to do to move out.
Which especially I can relate to, especially at that age.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're going to be skipping around, but, like, Rebecca eventually gets, like, a Starbucks kind of job.
Yeah, yeah, she's a barista.
Which is very straightforward. And you see her throughout the film kind of dressing differently and like...
Absolutely, yeah.
Acting a little bit more adult, which, really, I can't really mock, you know, like... I don't like it, but if you want to live that...
She was doing what's sort of normal to do. But I think her flaw is that... She was with Enid in her frame mind, and, like, all of a sudden, she really went, like, a 180.
And that's... You could tell it's hurtful to Enid.
Oh, absolutely.
But then again, like, she doesn't... I like this movie because it has a character who, again, is relatable, but not necessarily, like, 100% sympathetic. Like, Enid does mean things. Enid does stupid things.
Oh, yeah,
things.
She's an asshole.
Yeah. And, like, her complete, like, attitude at the movie theater... When she gets that job, which is hilarious.
Do you serve beer? Any alcohol?
I wish. Actually, you wish. After about 5 minutes of this movie, you're gonna wish you had 10 beers.
What are you doing? You don't ever criticize the feature.
Why? What's the difference? I mean, we already got his money.
Look, that's the policy, okay? If you want to make up your own rules, open up your own theater.
Yeah, let me have lots of butter on it.
There you go. Smothered in delicious yellow chemical sludge.
What the hell is wrong with you?
What? I was just joking around with the customers. It's my shtick.
Well, lose it. And why aren't you pushing the larger sizes? Didn't you get training about upsizing?
But I feel really weird. It's pretty sleazy.
It's not optional.
Hi. Can I get a medium 7-Up?
Medium? Why, sir, do you not know that for a mere 25 cents more, you could purchase a large beverage? And you know, I'm only telling you this because we're such good friends. Medium is really only for suckers who don't know the concept of value.
What are you talking about? I mean, what kind of loser gets fired after one day?
Yeah.
I think that guy is in Napoleon Dynamite. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I think you're right. The manager.
Yeah, the manager there. Because he's like really like white hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what is she like? She says the movie sucks. And like,
yeah,
and
basically makes fun of them for what they're eating.
Like, yeah.
Fast food.
She gets fired in a day. And she's not even really fazed by getting fired.
No, she knows she's going to get fired, I think, when she acts that way.
Like, yeah, she'd, like, rather be... It sounds weird, like, she'd rather be herself than hold a job. And you and I both know there's, like, some element of selling out if you want to maintain a job. If you expect to be 100% yourself, like, comment-wise all the time in a job, then you better make it as a comedian or something, you know?
Like, of course. I have a similar kind of situation. My mom wanted me to get a job after, like, high school, and I think I applied to, like, some supermarket, and during the interview, they're like, can you pass a drug test? And I laughed and said no. Even though I could, knowing that I wouldn't get the job, so I could tell my mom sorry I didn't get the job.
Oh, man. That's hilarious.
So I pretended to be a drug addict to not get hired so I wouldn't have to work. This is before Blockbuster.
It's true. Like, you have to have some level of professionalism and decorum.
Of course.
In a job. And, look, it took me a while to understand that, you know.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. So that's kind of like Rebecca's plan. But the whole thing with Seymour kind of, I don't want to say it's what splits them, because it's more really like Rebecca getting professional that splits them as friends. But also, like... Seymour really sidetracks Enid. And not his fault. Like, it's
no, I think...
He becomes her project, kind of.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Rather than, like, getting a job or something, like, Seymour's, like, her job in a way. And Seymour's an interesting character to me, too, because he kind of lives in both worlds. Like, he has a corporate job, so, like, he is an adult, but at the same time, all he does is really is collect vinyls and collect... So, like, I think of Seymour as just, like, a mixture of both Rebecca and Enid.
That's a really good point. I think he's... Now that you mentioned, I think he's like Enid. It's like Enid, I hope not, but theoretically in however many years older Seymour is.
Yeah.
Like, It's like it took him that long to even get.
He probably climbed the corporate ladder of the fried chicken company. And stuff. But yeah, he kind of, to me, he represents both of them. Mm-hmm. And then you're right, she becomes his project.
Which and now that we're like talking about it, it's funny because she puts so much more effort into that than getting a job like that. It's like job level effort she puts into him, like
totally
getting him like the date
or, yeah. Going to that concert, like it's crazy.
There's that one scene where they go to like the sex store.
Oh yeah.
And that has that famous, I guess one thing I really remembered of this film, the visual image is I guess she like begs him to buy her that like S&M mask.
Yeah, it's like almost like Batman in a way.
Yeah. Batman that S&M. She wears to visit Rebecca at like the Starbucks place.
And she gets mad at her for not, because she always wanted to go in there with her.
One of the things I liked about this movie too, and this is like definitely high school related, is that her remedial art class.
Mirror, father, mirror. Mirror, father, mirror. Mirror, father, mirror.
That piece is entitled Mirror, Father, Mirror. I like to show it to people that I'm meeting for the first time because I think it says so much about who I am and what it feels like to inhabit my specific skin. And this is exactly what I'm hoping to get from each of you over the course of this summer. A picture of your own self-exploration. Now, my own background is in video and performance art, but I'm hoping that doesn't influence you too much, and you'll find your own ways of externalizing the internal. And at the end of the summer, this class has been invited to participate in a show of high school art at the Neighborhood Activity Center. The title of the show will be Brotherhood and Community, Art as Dialogue. Are there any questions so far?
Just first of all, the teacher. Did you ever take art in high school?
No, but she reminds me of our, what was the middle school teacher, Miss Helsley?
Oh, Miss Helsley, yeah.
You know, kind of like hippie-ish.
Yeah,
she's like,
really into Bob Dylan. She's yeah. Like, Brian, you'd really like Bob Dylan.
Or she loved George O'Keefe. I just
George
remember
O'Keefe,
that.
Yeah, George O'Keefe. Yeah, you know, like, no offense to art teachers out there. I love art teachers. And what a cool job to, like, teach art.
Absolutely.
But I feel like art teachers fit in a certain genre of people.
I wonder if they're still like that.
Oh, it's a good question.
You know what I mean?
Well, I think they're cutting a lot of art programs.
Probably not where we grew up, but...
But if you think about it, like, a lot of art teachers are probably that we knew are probably the same age we are now.
That's so weird.
And I don't think they're people we necessarily wouldn't hang out with over the other teachers. Like, they're probably, like, the quote-unquote coolest teachers to hang out with.
Probably, yeah.
Maybe not as, like, students, necessarily.
Yeah. As adults, like...
But as adults,
we relate more to them than we do with, like, a math teacher.
Or the science teacher, you know. And again, like, I don't know. But I don't know. Like, I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
But no, she does remind me of our middle school teacher, Miss Helsley. Or just... I love this class because Enid is actually someone who's really artistic.
She's really good at art, but she totally demeans her work and calls it silly pictures or something.
Absolutely. Like, she's actually someone who does art.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean anything to her because it doesn't have, like, a traditional, quote-unquote, art meaning.
There's no social commentary.
Yes, that's the best way to put it.
Like, that one girl does all that stupid art.
Yeah, like the tampon and the teacup.
Yes, exactly. Like, oh, this is amazing.
Or even, like, that one kid.
The video game?
What is that? Like, it's like, the scene opens up, where she's like, mirror, father, mirror, father. It's like
the short film, mirror, father, mirror.
And it's really, like, again, this is written by someone who's an, or co-written by someone who's
it
an
literally
artist.
Looks like the people in SVA made that movie.
Yeah, it's high pretentious art.
Yeah, like really bad, like short film with like, I don't know, black and white.
Look, look, there's merit to that, I guess. There
I don't
is,
know. I don't
but...
think so. It's okay if that's like you're a teenager and that's your first thing, but this lady's like supposedly 40. Yes, she's a teacher. Like, that shit sucks for a 40-year-old.
It's
bad.
To me, it's less art and more like... It relates more to writing to me, like what she likes. Again,
yeah,
like
yeah,
the social
no, you're right. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that aspect of art, but not. I don't know. I don't know enough about like art teaching,
yeah,
visual
fine.
Art.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Clearly, Enid is talented. You know?
Absolutely.
Incredibly talented.
Way more than anybody in that class.
I read that the what's his name, the author of the graphic novel,
Daniel Klaus.
Yeah, Daniel Klaus. Like they asked him to do the drawings. Yeah. And he's like, and this is, I believe, really ahead of its time. He's like, no, like, I don't want her to draw like me. And then they found, like, a woman he felt like the character would draw mostly like. I forgot who it was. And, like,
sure.
She
yeah.
did it. And I think that's, like, cool because, like, it would be so easy for them to be like, Enid's drawings are the comic that we see. You know?
Exactly, yeah, totally.
Which is, like... Silly, you know? It,
absolutely.
It's easy. That's a better way to put
they
it.
They reference that early in the movie, though, when they see the Satanists in the diner and she draws them. I believe that's in the graphic novel.
Mm.
But beyond that, yeah, no, it's completely different than his artwork or whatever exists.
She's, like, not doing well in the class at all, which is complete bullshit, but whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Then she kind of, like, I don't know if she necessarily gets it, but she kind of understands how to play the game a little bit.
She literally finally gets success in her class by handing in art that she didn't make.
A found object.
Found object.
Yeah.
And she loves it because it's social commentary. The teacher loved it.
And it's that, what is the name of his...
Coon Chicken? Or it used to be
called... It used to be Coon... It's Cook's Chicken
Cook's
now.
Chicken. It used to be called Coon's
it
Chicken.
It used to be called Coon's Chicken, which
that's
is...
That's what it was called, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like... not going around that.
No, it's like a and it's like a racist caricature of like
yeah, it's like that like
a
stereotypical
blackface
like
man,
yeah,
yeah.
Like, yeah, the lips.
And Seymour works there, which we kind of, I guess he took it from the company.
Yeah, I think
he said like, oh, a guy gave it to me. But.
Yeah, I forget the exact circumstance that he had it with, but I think it was in his jazz room. His records room or whatever.
Yeah, and she takes it. Brings it in. That scene's great because the teacher's like asking questions and you think she's going to get in trouble. And essentially it's one of those scenes like, oh, I love it. This is
yeah.
amazing. But it's sad because, again, I think she brought it in maybe as like a joke or whatever. I don't know. But what do you think?
I think she brought it in knowing that the dumb teacher is going to like it because everything up until that point that the teacher liked, I believe even one of the girl who does the tampon cup thing brings found art, or maybe she considers that found art or
yeah.
something, sculpture. I think she knows that the teacher's going to like it. I think even when she describes it, she's really lackadaisical about it as well.
It's sad, funny, and realistic that it becomes her... Part of her salvation, though, because...
Is that? Because then she offers her the college program, yeah.
Yeah, like the scholarship to, like, a really good art school from mm-hmm. that. And it's something she's, like, really looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Which, like,
she finally, I guess, accepts a part of, like, evolving as, like, from, like, a teenager into a
Yeah, and that's
adult.
Kind of like... Now that we're, like... I love discussing things because it, like, makes me realize things.
Yeah, of course.
It's similar to what Rebecca's doing, kind of, too. Mm-hmm. If you think of it in the sense of, like, Rebecca's going mainstream and
yeah.
being, like, a Starbucks person.
Yeah.
So she brings in this artwork because that's kind of what the powers that be want of her. As
yeah,
weird
exactly.
as that is, you know? Mm-hmm. It ends up blowing up in her face because there's that art show that she doesn't attend for reasons we'll discuss.
Yeah, yeah.
Where she can't defend her own artwork there, and they say it's like super racist, which it is, but
that was the intention of the artwork. She finally sort of gives into what everyone's telling her to give into, and when she does, she gets fucked over anyway.
Ugh.
So like, I understand.
Which sucks, but that's like so like life. You
it
know?
Is, yeah.
As depressing as that is, ugh. Just to tie up other like storylines in this film, I do actually like how this film descends into like. A realistic shitstorm.
Yes.
In terms of, first, it's like that Maxine. I don't know what order these things go into, but like that Maxine is moving in with her father,
mm-hmm.
which completely sucks, you know.
Yeah.
Her friendship with Rebecca is falling
apart.
Which
she shouldn't even care, because she should be moving out anyway. She should be happy that her dad...
Yeah.
A lot of the things about moving out of adolescence is you don't want to accept the change that's coming.
Absolutely. That's the way to put it, yeah. Yeah, and then there's, like, the Rebecca thing, which is, again, falling apart, because Rebecca's starting to hang out with, like, work friends and different kinds of people, and she's feeling left out.
I think one of the first times is when they're, you could see their path changing, is that they go to, like, that coffee shop, and that guy's handing out, like, the concert.
Oh, yeah.
Promos, so he goes to my band Alien Autopsy, and obviously, Enid's like, fuck, this guy's so lame, and that's, I think, the first time Rebecca's sort of like, no, this is cool, we should go, and you could just tell that, like, Enid's like, oh, no, I'm losing her, too.
Yeah.
To this douchebag.
The other thing in that scene is, like, she's like, oh, look at that blonde guy, he's cute.
Yeah.
And, like, and then he walks away, like, you want to listen to some reggae tonight?
Yes, reggae.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That scene, like, you could see, like, they're starting to be into different things.
Yeah.
I would love to have seen what their high school life was like. We all know people who we went to school with, maybe we don't even remember their names, but they were like, two people who are always together.
There's someone she reminds me of.
Oh, really?
Oh, like that. I don't want to mention names. I really don't want to go there. You know what I mean? Like that type of person. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. It's funny because, like, we know girls like her, or even guys, right?
Yeah.
And back then, you might have, like, oh, this person's cool. But looking back, like, I bet there's so many people theoretically in Enid's high school look back and say, like, wow, she was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of unfortunate things keep happening to her. And it's not, it's unfortunate, but it's not really, because a lot of it's just her being selfish and, like, a kid.
Yeah, a lot of it is her own making. Like, she puts herself in the end. Like, that's what I relate to, too, is, like, you make these, like, little dumb mistakes along the way, along your life, but once they finally come together, like, it could be catastrophic. I mean, it's you know what I mean? Like, those, like, the little things add up after a while. I don't know. And it kind of comes
like,
to
like with Seymour, you know, she's trying to set him up the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she doesn't set him up with this, so eventually, like, the person from the ad does contact him.
Yes.
And they start dating. And you know what? They're, like, not really that similar. But whatever. Like, they still end up dating. She's, like, a pretty...
Yeah,
woman,
yeah. She's,
you know?
She's totally acceptable. Yeah, absolutely.
And he's lonely. He deserves somebody.
And he deserves... To be with someone his age and not be hanging out with, like, an 18-year-old.
Yeah, like, the little silly adventure that they're going on. Like, they start to have, like, a mature adult relationship. And Enid is clearly, like, I don't know, she's jealous, but...
Yeah,
like,
she gets mad. She, like, realizes
and she's, like, angry, but it's not... And it's in a weird way where it's, like, she almost doesn't...
But she sets all these actions into motion. She makes the plan with Rebecca that they're going to move out, and then Rebecca takes it seriously.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
She set that plan in motion. She set Seymour's path in motion, and then she sets everybody up, and then she gets pissed when it works out.
Now, she didn't set up Seymour with that woman, but she definitely, like, set him up to be with her, like, cause she's kind of.
Well,
like,
I think she even said, "You got to call her back."
Cause, yeah,
because in her mind, she at that point she knew that it was the real lady, because she was the fake lady.
And it's one of the, like, I don't know what you think of the scene where she ends up, Seymour and Enid end up sleeping together.
Yeah,
it's, like, so sad to me because,
yeah,
you know, she's, I would say, pressures him a little bit, and he's kind of has a little bit of, like, he has
feelings
for her.
At first, he's hesitant. Yeah, he admits it, but yeah,
he admits his feelings for her, but he kind of, I think he always knew, like, I shouldn't really have feelings for her.
Yeah.
He's never, like, forces himself on her.
Not at all. He's a nice person.
Yeah, he really is.
He doesn't even get creepy. Like, you know how, like, guys will, like, fish to see, like, if
yes.
they can go past a certain border.
And you see that, especially
girl.
On film, too.
Yeah.
Like, he never crosses that line.
Yeah.
And one might say it's weird that he hangs out with her all the time, but that's, like...
Yeah, I mean, she kind of, like, forces herself into his life, and she kind of makes it more exciting, so I guess that's why.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't really hang out with her to get any sort of, like, sexual gratification or whatever.
But she really comes on to him, and basically his old feelings for her are, like, reignited.
Mm-hmm.
They sleep with each other, and it ruins his,
she
like...
She gets drunk.
Yeah, she gets drunk. Oh, yeah, she gets drunk.
Yeah, and then he even says, like, you had to have known that, like, I thought of you. I always thought about it possibly happening with you.
Do you think she knew? No. I kind of think so.
I mean, to some degree, yeah.
To some degree,
I mean,
right?
It finally happens, and then he basically starts stalking her in a way. Like,
yeah, because he ends things with the other girl because he's like...
Yeah, that scene where he goes to break up with her, and she's on the conference call with like the coworker, like talking about the closing of the property. It's just so douche chilly and amazing. Hilarious.
Oh, God. But he thinks he's doing the right thing because he thinks he's like essentially...
He's going to be with Enid.
Enid, he's found the one.
The one, yeah.
Like, it was like... It's almost too poetic to him.
Yeah.
That he needs to be with Enid.
Like, yeah, like, he literally goes, like, to, like, the next day, I think, even in person, to, like, break up with her.
Yeah. And then he thinks it's, like, meant to be. And I feel bad for him. I feel bad for her. I think Enid led him on, certainly. I'm not blaming her, like, you know? Because, like, he shouldn't assume now we're in a relationship. That's, like, a creep move.
Yeah, yeah.
But.
Totally.
On the other hand, like, she definitely used his feelings a little bit for her own, like, selfish.
Like, absolutely.
Pleasure. And it wasn't just like, oh, I want to have sex. It wasn't like that.
Yeah. And like, Seymour was like, in a way, it's almost nice that like he had sex with her and wanted to be with her in a way. Like, and didn't, I don't know. Something like naive about Seymour in that way.
Yeah, no.
Because he's obviously probably hasn't been with a lot of women in his life. So.
And he really likes her.
I think so.
And I think she really likes him in a different way.
Yeah, like she probably always wondered what it would be like to be with him, and then she had sex with him, and she's like, okay, it's not going to be that way. We should just be friends.
Which is fair. Yeah, you know? I just. It's not her fault. He breaks up with like his girlfriend and does all those kind of things.
But. That night, though, when they're together, she does say, let's just get in the car, let's drive away, let's just start a new life together. He, as an adult, he should...
Yes, and that's
he
what
should
I'll
be
say.
Like, this is not going to happen. But on the other hand, I don't think he has the social skills to really know that. Like, I
true.
Think he's secluded in terms of...
Oh, this is a movie that, like, really makes you, like...
There's so much... Yeah, there's, like, it doesn't seem heavy. To be, like, there's a lot going on, but there is. There really is stuff going
it's
on.
It's heavy because it's, like, realistic heavy. Like, mm-hmm. These things happen to people.
Absolutely.
It's, again, not Deep Impact heavy.
No. Yes.
You're referencing Deep Impact. It's tough. It's almost uncomfortable to talk about because I don't want to make it seem like I'm blaming her completely, or that I'm saying he's like a complete invalid that he can't
make
decisions for himself.
No, I mean there's definitely responsibility on both their ends in terms of what happens.
I think for her it's more of like a learning experience.
Yeah, but her learning experience just ruins this guy's life. He loses his job.
Yes.
He loses his apartment. He has to move back home with his mother.
Oh man.
So what happens is that like Rebecca goes and like lives an adult life, I guess, and then she just destroys his life, Seymour's life.
And there's that great scene. Enid kind of like is resigned to the fact that she's gonna move in with Rebecca, and you kind of think that's just how they're gonna end. She's
yeah,
gonna
like
grow up,
yeah,
grow up like that. And she has this line. I think I wrote it down. Something along like, look at this ironing board. Isn't it great?
Yeah.
Like it's such a domestic. Playing house kind of life, too.
Sure.
As mature as Rebecca is, like, a lot of it's, like, playing house.
Yeah, it's, like, what you think being an adult living your own should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right. I think that line just completely sets Enid off again. Like, fuck this. I can't do this. Like, if she's excited over an ironing board, this is not for me.
No, exactly. Yeah, and this is a complex movie with complex characters.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as we said, Seymour's life completely falls apart.
Absolutely.
Enid's life doesn't really fall apart. She's just still discovering herself.
Yeah, I guess if at that point at the end, like, she's just continuing to be the person she is.
A beat we didn't hit on is that whole that Norman thing, that guy who has, like, dementia, I believe, like, on the bench.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And they kind of, like, tease him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's, like... I don't know. His journey becomes like super like symbolic to her.
Yeah.
They canceled the bus route.
Yeah, so not even an active bus. So yeah, that the ending is it's sort of up in the air. You don't really know what's happening, and there's no reality to it. Like, who is this guy? Does the guy exist? There's also the pants on the floor, the jeans that are always on that sidewalk by the bus stop.
Yeah.
I think that plays into the title, right, of Ghost World. So like.
Okay, I was gonna ask, like, what do you think the title means?
Okay, so...
Not to, like, a school question.
No. No, I mean, that's a really valid question, because I think I was thinking about that for a while now. So I think it relates to loneliness, obviously. Like, if you look at the movie, like, it's pretty sparse in terms of, like, characters, or even when they're out and about in public, there's not people everywhere. Like, you think of a movie. So I think it has to do with loneliness. I think that it has to do with a lot of the stuff around them is just remnants from the past. So, like, Ghost World in, like, a literal sense. Like, this is, like, the past meeting the future. And I think Ghost World also, it just plays into, like, the surreal aspect. Like, the end of, like, those weird little things in the movie. Like, the jeans that are always on the ground. Or the guy on the bench you were just talking about.
Even, like, more lighthearted. But, like, the Mike Judge guy is, like,
totally, yeah. Like, these surreal characters you don't, they're surreal. Yeah, like, the, you, it's almost like this isn't real in a way.
Yeah, or
like the guy like, with the nunchucks. Yeah. You know, that guy, yeah, he's doing
the
nunchucks.
Weird, the Weird Al waiter.
Weird Al waiter, exactly, yeah. Like, these people don't really, they exist, but like they don't. It's like a lot of the characters feel like they were pulled in from different worlds or different, like, places. You know what I mean? Like, they're so distinct, these, like, weird characters.
Definitely. Yeah. Like,
I feel like I'm fumbling on this, but
no, but that's this kind of film.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I can't really grasp what it is, but it's not a bad thing.
No.
I feel so corny saying this, but like that's like life, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to grasp these certain things sometimes.
Absolutely.
I mean, what did you do? You like the ending? Again, she just like kind of, I don't know if she runs away or just like it's kind of ambiguous. She just leaves.
Yeah,
on the bus.
I don't need answers. I almost like. If it's a movie like this, right, like, I don't need the ending to be obvious because, like, life is that way, you know? There's never a real answer to anything, and you never really know where you're going next.
No, it's like, she gets on a bus, like, for her next chapter, and I don't mean it like, oh, you know, she's... All the ends are tied in this world.
Yeah, it's
you know?
Not
it's
eat,
not
love,
that.
Pray, or whatever that shit pray, is. Love, you pray, love, no. Or whatever. Yeah, like, there's no great... No one walks away from this movie with some, like, great understanding.
No, especially, like, the viewer or her. Like, in it, like, it's just... I think her big revelation, maybe, is just, like, it's time to move on, you know?
Yeah.
It's time to move on from all
but,
this.
But, like, in a sense, it's also weird because, like... That bus doesn't really exist. That bus line doesn't really exist.
That's
bus
what. That's
that
what's
guy
puzzling,
doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't.
Did she die? Sopranos like ending?
No. People like I was like reading an article actually. People say she commits. She does not commit suicide.
What? I did not get that take.
So stupid. Yeah, I guess it could be like the Tony Soprano. It's not the it's the journey, not the what is that saying? That stupid saying like the journey.
Oh, it's not the
destination.
The destination. It's the journey. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's something. There's a more eloquent, pretty way of saying that
yeah,
we're
yeah,
not
yeah,
saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, I'm fine with that ending. I mean, what do we want to happen for her, for Ina to accept it and become an adult with Rebecca, for her to be with Seymour? Like,
honestly, I think a lot. I don't know. Okay, I don't think the be with Seymour angle. A lot of people would have like the mainstream audience would have been okay with.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's still like kind of always creepy.
Yeah, sure.
I think. Like, if I'm drawing a different film that's not necessarily an enjoyable film, but more like a mainstream enjoyable film, it's like she ends up seeing the merit in Seymour's new relationship and she's happy for him.
Yeah.
She moves into Rebecca and then she... I was thinking she ends up dating the guy at the convenience store.
Brad Renfro.
Yeah,
instead
yeah,
cause
of,
she admits that she likes him at some point.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That but would like, be like that would be like the if like the Hollywood ending. I
instead,
guess.
Rebecca
yeah.
ends Everyone up learns. Like dating him, right, or something. Or it seems
I don't
like,
even think anybody does. I think.
Oh, I thought they were like started talking or
maybe.
Something.
Maybe
I think it's
possible.
Like subtly implied.
Sure,
she
well,
doesn't. End up
it's always subtly implied. She actually says that the guy's always like you, not me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's different than what you expect, but I again, it just mirrors. Real life and
absolutely
as sad as that is,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
true. any other scenes or moments in Ghost World you want to talk about, or things that you really liked, even like little lines or moments?
Yeah, so like I mean, there's those scenes in the mini mart are really fun. what's the character's name? The weird guy with the shirt. I know. I think his name is Doug. Yeah, his name's Doug. His interactions are just amazing, and that plays into the question earlier, like Ghost World. What does it mean? Like he's
yeah.
a character is like he's weird. So yeah, he constantly has this really funny rapport with like the shop owner.
Sup, Josh? Hey, give me 2 packs of cigarettes today. Working overtime, 16 hours. And nature's nectar, wake up juice. And give me like 6 of these beef jerkies. Hungry enough to chew the crotch out of a rag doll.
Hey, you! How many times I tell you? No check, no service. Get the hell out of my store. What do you think this is, Club Med?
It's America, dude. Learn the rules.
Learn the rules? You learn the rules. We Greeks invented democracy.
You also invented homos. Fuck you. You wish. You're buying dinner first.
Yeah, the whole Greeks invented homosexuality line.
Oh, yeah.
Which is wrong on so many levels because, I mean, it's right because they did. They love sodomy.
But, like, it's funny. Like, it's wrong, but, like, that's something that guy would say.
Absolutely. You know? It's hilarious. Yeah. And it's also weird because, like, the shop owner doesn't come off as Greek to me.
No, he doesn't really look Greek.
Like, to me, I thought he was, like, Middle Eastern. So that, like, kind of plays into, like, the theme of the movie. Where, like,
yeah, we just did Encino Man, which is another very famous shopkeeper scene. But especially when we were in high school, mm-hmm. which is, again, this movie is 2001, so it's, like, around the same time.
Yeah.
They'd be a little bit older than us, but, like, going to, like, 7-Eleven and stuff, or, like, Dunkin' Donuts.
That's what you did. Yeah, so it's, like where you went, because...
I totally get it, and, like, again, the shirtless character is hilarious. He's, like, the shopkeeper's, like, oh, no, you know, no shirt, no service.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's, like, this is America.
Learn the rules.
learn the rules, yeah.
I'm so hungry, I could eat the crotch out of a rag doll.
like, what a line.
It's
like,
amazing, yeah. Working overtime. He buys the beer, the 240s or whatever it is.
The lines in this in general are so, like, that's where, like, it contributes to, like, what you're saying about the whole ghost world thing. Like, I remember a line when Enid is talking to Seymour, and, like, he's like, oh, what kind of girls are you into? He's like, you like girls with big tits? Like, something like that, or big boobs? Like, it's not like... Yes, it's a crude line.
Yeah, but it's realistic. It's the way people talk.
And especially coming from Enid, the character we learn, it doesn't sound, like, weird or out of place or, like, even disgusting.
Yeah.
And you know she's saying it to kind of, like, see Seymour's reaction to literally those words.
Yeah, and he kind of is, like, cringy and, like, yeah, oh, don't like, say that to me. I don't want to hear you say that.
He's like, I suppose if we're, like, you know, something like that.
I love when they're going to the, in terms of small scenes, they're going to the that's... concert to see the blues guy, and the lady with, like, the kids crosses in front of the car, and he stops short, and he's like, have some more kids, why don't you? Like, he's just so mad. It's so good.
But his way, that's why Buscemi is really great. Like, his way of getting mad is, like, he bottles it up,
and it, like, comes out.
And he almost feels bad right after he, I mean, he even says it, but, like, you could see it in his face that he feels bad right after he says it. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, he's so good. This is just a well-acted film. You can tell why it was nominated for, like, the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time I watched it and really, like, let me pay attention to this film and watch it, you know? And I'm glad I can really, really appreciate it now. That's for sure. But I can imagine, like I said before, it must have been really awesome to see, like, as a high schooler, because it's just...
Yeah, no, I wanted Enid to be my girlfriend almost in a way.
And I could see that. Like, compare this, again, to a movie that came out when we were in high school, American Pie. Or, like, close to high school. Like,
worlds apart.
Worlds apart.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's... How can I put it? There is, especially at the time, kind of this thought that every teen movie is going to be like that.
Yeah.
So when you see something like a ghost world, it's like, I can imagine, like, the mind-blown factor.
And it kind of, yeah, and it kind of plays into what we were talking about earlier, our childhood, like, because we would walk around towns, when we used to go to the concerts and walk to 7-Eleven, and, like, there'd be these weird people. Like, we did what they did, like, just, like, hanging around.
Absolutely, and honestly.
All we did, me and you, was make fun of people all the time.
Oh, we sound so bad. People are going to hate us after this
But not
episode.
In a bad way.
No, but we would say shit like that, like, shit like Enid.
Crazy shit to people.
All the time. Yeah, all the time. Like, silly little lines, or talk about George Michael or something to somebody. Oh, man.
Yeah, or like how they call, like, the waiter Weird Al, like, we would do something like that.
Absolutely.
None of it was ever, like, mean-spirited.
No,
really.
We never went as far as, like, an Enid Seymour situation.
No.
Like, grooming somebody for something.
The closest thing, I guess, was I was with Chris Carroll. I made the prank call. I prank called some lady's house in the middle of the night saying that her husband's missing.
Oh, no.
And I gave Kyle's number. I gave Kyle's house number.
No, you didn't.
And the lady called the police and gave Kyle's house. I think the police came to Kyle's house in the middle of the night.
Does Kyle know this?
Yes!
Oh, I didn't know that.
And his mom called in the next day. I denied it, but Chris already told her that we did.
Chris!
Remember, like, the school directory books? We called some random person.
Oh,
some
my
random
God.
School directory. I pretended, like, I'm like, is
so
your husband...
so bad.
Like, I was fishing to play off of something. Like, I said something like, is your husband home? She's like, no, he's on a work trip. I'm like, oh, yes, something happened to your husband. He's been in
no,
an accident.
No, that's terrible.
My name's Kyle Reinfried. I gave Kyle's house number. He's never talked about that with you?
If he did, it was so long ago. Oh, that hasn't come up in years. Probably I can't wait till he hears this.
This is like the closest thing. That was pretty bad.
He's going to listen to this and be like, what the hell,
guys?
It was
bad because...
That's really bad.
Because the random lady, I don't even know who she was, thought something happened to her husband, and then the police came to Kyle's house like that night. It was pretty late.
You probably like would get in a lot more trouble now if you did that.
Yeah, totally. It would be like on the news or something. Kids pretend, you know, whatever.
Oh, that is so bad.
It's pretty bad. It's not as bad as Seymour, but it's pretty bad.
No, but it's pretty...
Like making her think that some random lady in the middle of the night something happened to her husband. I don't know, something makes me laugh.
I'm laughing now, I'm sorry.
It was funny because the prank wasn't really on the lady.
No,
it was
on Kyle. It was on Kyle.
So yeah, her being upset is just like the, I don't know, whatever. Collateral damage of playing a prank on Kyle. It's like two levels.
Yeah, but that's like so like teenage thinking.
Yeah.
The joke's on Kyle, you know, and it was, but like imagine that what she's feeling. Oh my God.
Oh, it's terrible because even on Kyle's end, like his mom was like automatically probably knew it probably was me or someone, like it was just one of his dumb friends. But that lady for a while truly thought something happened to her husband.
Oh man, that is so bad.
Good times.
So Ghost World, every week we rate the film based on like a 1 to 5 scale, but we pick something in the film to rate it on, like a rubric. So what in this film is like a good object or image that we can rate this film on a scale of 5? It's tough. It's a tough one.
I gotta think about it.
The pants, I was thinking we could, but that seems to, like, this film merits more than a 5 pants rating.
I can't add milkshakes, glasses of milk.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to think of something we reference so it's not totally out.
Yeah, we could do that.
Out of how many 5 dresses Enid lost her virginity in? That's another crazy. There's too much about this movie to talk about.
There's a lot of like little things. That garage sale is great. But no, I do not want to do 5 dresses
Enid. No, I'm just kidding.
Lost her virginity.
I really mean that.
But maybe the milkshake/glasses of milk. Oh man, I wish we could find something better, but
yeah, I'm trying to think.
Vinyl records, you know?
I
don't know, whatever. Either the glasses of milk, milkshakes, or jazz vinyl records.
Technically they're blues.
Or blues.
Glasses of milk.
Glasses of milk. Perfect.
Okay. Because it's just like a really silly thing.
It is a silly line.
Okay.
God, you just ordered a giant glass of milk.
That's a vanilla milkshake.
So out of 5 glasses of milk, what will you rate this film?
You mean milkshake.
Yes, milkshake.
5 glasses of milk, you mean milkshakes.
You do the glasses of milk, I'll do milkshakes.
I'll do 4 out of 5.
Okay, just want to be clear. That's fine, but like... For those of you out there, if this is your first time listening, we're not doing it like against like Citizen Kane and like
no, I don't
like
even
that.
Like Citizen Kane.
But yes, but you know what I mean. Yeah, like
Rosebud,
it's not like
whatever.
Is it Rosebud?
Yeah, I think it is Rosebud.
No, but like it's not on like Oscar.
No,
movies.
Yeah.
It's on like enjoyability or what you think of it. So 4 out of 5, and how
I mean, because I feel like I feel stupid giving. I really want to give it a 5 out of 5.
Then go
like,
for it.
Okay, 5 glasses of milk.
5 glasses of milk, and why is that?
I think that. It's a movie that I related to when I was still in high school, and I still relate to now. And I don't know, there's just so many great scenes. I mean, I think of this movie in scenes more than in plot at times.
I think that's really fair. It's like it's almost a series of vignettes at points.
Yeah, it's not really a heavy plot film. I give 5 out of 5 for the great characters, for Enid, for Seymour, and then even really for the peripheral characters, the Mini Mart guy, Weird Al at the diner. It's really memorable to me. I don't know.
Yeah, no, honestly, I really like this film. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5.
I brought it, so I had to give it. I really
No, 100%. I'm glad. I was hoping you'd say 5 out of 5, because if I said 4 out of 5 too.
Yeah, no, 5 out of 5. So. Yeah. And that's 5 out of 5 glasses of milk, and I'm lactose intolerant.
I am slightly lactose intolerant as well, so let's talk about that.
Started in my early 30s now.
Oh, that's usually... No, mine started like 27.
Okay, mine started maybe like 2-3 years ago.
That's normal.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
For most people. I mean, a lot of people are younger, but most people develop it. Who develop it later. Good facts, guys.
Yes.
No, but 4 out of 5 for me, because, like, I know it sounds weird because it's called Ghost World, but I love the world that this film builds.
Yeah.
I love the characters. Enid is amazing. And, again, I mean, all the points we hit on, I think it was obvious we had a love affair for this film.
Yeah, and it has a lot of rewatchability, too, which also plays into...
Yeah. Look, I can see why certain people might not like this film if they can't relate to it.
Or just give it a chance, even. I think more people will find themselves liking it if they just, like, give it a shot.
Absolutely. And again, I'll say this. I think it was really ahead of its time.
Absolutely.
I think Enid's such a great character. And not great as, like, a good person, which I think we've made clear.
Well-written character.
A well-written character, yeah.
Yes. They all are.
So, 4 out of 5 for me, 5 out of 5 for you. Awesome film. Definitely check out Ghost World.
Yes.
Honestly, thanks so much for bringing Ghost World into the slumber party and just bringing it to my attention.
It's my pleasure, yeah.
It's, again, I had seen it, but, like, it was, like, not a great watch when I had seen it. Not that I didn't enjoy it, it was just, like, it was on TV and I was watching.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I had this movie on my list. I wasn't sure if it was a high school film. Definitely is, again, because, you know, there is a class in it, at least, and it's about an important time in...
Yeah, it's like the transition, which is probably probably the most important time of high school.
Absolutely. And it's really, like, honestly, it's definitely a really great film. And a film that I enjoyed watching. I'm definitely going to, like, recommend it to people, as I'm doing right now, in such eloquent ways. So we have a couple traditions on the slumber party, and it is your first time, so I always ask this question to my guests. So I think I forgot last week, now that I mention it. That's why I take notes.
Well, I think you've had Kyle and Dan on before.
That's a good point, yeah. So in the slumber party, you know, I'm sure you had some as kids or even in high school. What sleeping bag would you bring to the slumber party if you could bring any sleeping bag today? Now, you can create it. You don't. I don't want you going on, like, Amazon right now. Like, oh, this, like...
Like, what would be on it?
Yeah, you could put anything on a sleeping bag. What would it be?
It would be black, to be honest with you. It would be a black sleeping
bag. Black and black? Like, interior black, exterior black?
Maybe purple on the inside. Change it up a little.
That's kind of cool. I like that.
Is that a bad answer?
No, it's a good answer. Okay. The most common one is that sleeping bag that goes over your head. I'm not saying that's a bad answer, but...
Wait, so this is not just the way... This is not, like, what... I was thinking of it in terms of, like, what graphic would be on it, but you mean, like, what kind of...
No, I mean anything. I don't care. It's just a silly question.
Jesus Christ, you're giving me anxiety right now.
That question gives me anxiety.
That question gives me anxiety. I don't know.
Well, I apologize. Just sleep in the corner on some blankets.
Yes. Pretty much.
Be that guy. All right, Wes, is there any place that you'd want people to follow you? I know you're pretty anti-social media.
I don't have
media. Yeah.
I really don't.
So literally you want, like, your home address or your phone number?
Yes. You could text me. No. I don't have any social media right now. If for some reason anybody wants to find me through this, which no one will, understandably, you can talk to Brian. He could find me.
All right, just ask me and then you could find him.
Yeah. He knows a guy that knows a guy.
True. Well, I know you.
Yeah, next time, I guess we could talk about a movie that's easier to talk about.
No, this was fun. This was fun. We got into a lot of, like, personal things, but fun stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know how much Kyle's going to like this episode, but...
I don't even know why Ryan Feed would listen to this.
Wow, I did not remember that story about Kyle. Well, you know what? He'll be able to verify it on this podcast, High School Slumber Party, next week, as the Foodie Films man himself will be stopping by here to discuss a film of his choice. Well, I gave him, like, multiple choice, but he chose Hairspray. And that's 2007's Hairspray, not the John Waters original. Again, he chose that one. I think we'll eventually get to both, but here's the trailer.
It was a time of tradition. A time of values. A time.
People who are different, their time is coming.
To shake things up.
Not in Baltimore, it isn't.
Hurry up, Penny, we're missing
Jess, it.
Darla.
Holly.
Noreen. Doreen.
And I'm Link.
So if every night you're singing and you lie in bed.
That was our very own Link Larkin.
And I'm Motormouth Maybell, pitching rhythm your way.
Dancing on that show is my dream.
Want to be one of the nicest kids in town? Cut school tomorrow and come audition.
No one in this house is auditioning for anything.
But Mom! Amber?
Save your personal life for the camera, sweetie. Oh,
Shiny.
Woo! Go on, get out there and show them.
Council member, Miss Tracy Turnblad.
First the hair, now this.
Tracy certainly has redefined our standards.
That's for sure.
When you follow your own beat.
We get any more white people in here, this is going to be a suburb.
The world will follow you.
I think no one used the start of a pretty big adventure.
Oh, 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 you can't stop today. No. As it comes speeding down the track.
Good job, yes.
Spray.
This is America. You gotta think big to be big.
Big ain't the problem in this family, Wilbur.
Hashtag Zach Attack. Of course, Zach Attack, another show on the Cage Club Podcast Network. By the way, you can check out so many great shows on said Cage Club Podcast Network, like Zach Attack and Third Time's a Charm and Wistful Thinking and Contenders and Real Bad and a bunch of other stuff. And remember, this show's home is cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. But you can find us on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify now, anywhere you get your podcasts. So remember, this is like really important. Tell a friend, write a review, like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter, or follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Instagram. I try to post a lot of cool things. Next week's going to be a cool episode, I guarantee that. Because Kyle's going to answer a question that's been burning in everyone in North Jersey's hearts and minds. Well, anyone who graduated a high school in North Jersey between 2001 and, I'll say, 2009. Why Kyle did not win best hair in his senior superlative. That's kind of why we picked Hairspray, and we're going to get the answer on air, as well as his rebuttal to every story that was told about him on this podcast today. You don't want to miss that. On that note, big thank you to Wesley Vina. We'll have him on again, that's for sure. Hope you enjoyed it. I leave you with another song on the soundtrack. Devil Got My Woman by Skip James. Don't forget to do your homework, watch Hairspray, convince John Cusack not to block us. Later, dudes.
Still here? It's over.
Go home. Go.